Okay, we're starting here, three lines down on the top of Ayin Omer Aleph. How beit Dehabayoti Bei Chamra d'Israel? There was this house, Jewish house, that had wine inside it. Aloved Kochavim, and Oved Kochavim went in there and achta the dasha be'ape, and then he closed the door, locked the door behind him. Have a biza b'dasha. There was a crack or a hole in the door, or maybe even a keyhole in the door that one could peer through. And the goy was found to be amongst the barrels that were in there. Amarava, kol talahadei biza shori. Anything that is visible through the hole that's there is mutar. Dahai gisa, vahai gisa asur. Anything that's on the periphery is asur. In essence, whatever the Oved Kochavim would be afraid of being caught, because he knows there's this hole, this crack in the door, and therefore, if someone could peer through, he wouldn't do anything that was opposite that crack or that opening, because then he would be caught at doing it. If there are areas where he could hide and not be seen, and then he doesn't worry about it, those areas are going to be problematic. And as Rashi notes over here, that the goy has a partnership or a part ownership in this wine. Because as we're going to see in the upcoming cases, if he's nitpas alav ganav, if he's going to be considered a thief, if he gets caught in those barrels, then all the barrels have been mutar. The reason over here that the barrels on the periphery are asur, because you can't see them, is because the goy doesn't feel uneasy about being there because he's a partner in the wine. So that lack of uneasiness makes him very comfortable with those barrels, and even opening up those barrels or doing what he wants with them. In the barrels that he can be seen with, that he will have fear about, because if he gets seen doing this, obviously the Jew is not going to be okay with his partner going in there and opening up the barrels or doing whatever he wants with the barrels. But Rashi makes that point that the goy is a partner in this situation. And even though it's unstated over here, it seems obvious that when he closed the door, it wasn't that he just closed the door, that he locked the door. Because otherwise, if the Jew had the ability to open the door, the same fear would exist. As long as there's accessibility, meaning that you could open up the door at any time, and the Jew could be around at any moment, or it's close to Reshut Rabim, where he's always fearful somebody will walk in, that's enough of a fear factor that he wouldn't do anything. So the assumption, or the underlying assumption here, is that the door is locked, and that's why only what you can see is mutar, and the things on the periphery are problematic. Similar, possibly, to the dinim of Yichud, where you have Petach Patuach Reshut Rabim. And there's a question amongst the poskim as to whether the door actually physically has to be open, or just has to be unlocked. Is the door being unlocked sufficient so that anybody can walk in at any time? And that's the fear factor that you're looking for, that person won't do the wrong thing. Or do you literally need it open to make it so it's so obvious that anybody could walk in or look in at any moment? And so what we're pointing out over here is that if he's fearful when the door is unlocked, that's enough of a reason to say that the wine would be mutar, assuming that there are people who can access it on a regular basis. No, Chamra d'Israel, Tayyoti bebeita, Tavadayir Israel be'elyona, Bobi kochamim betachtona. There was this wine in a shared place where the Jew used to live upstairs and the Oved Kochavim lived downstairs. The wine was kept downstairs, but the Jew always had visibility. He was upstairs, he could see down, and he could see what the goy was doing. Shamu kal tigra, they heard an altercation, a fight, something that was going out outside, a commotion of sort. Nafke, they ran out to see what was going on. Kadim ata Oved Kochavim, so the Oved Kochavim came back in first. And after the dash of Beape, and then he closed the door. Amarova, Chamra Shari, the wine is mutar, Meimar Amar. He would say to himself, Keichid Kadim Atayano, just like I came in earlier, or I came in first, Kadim Vata Israel, Beyati Be'el Yona. The Jew got there first also, even before him, Vekachazili, and he's watching me, or he can see what I'm doing. So the uncertainty is enough here to protect the wine. And as Rashi notes over here, first of all, anytime on this amud that it says shori, it means mutar b'shtia. And whenever it says it's asur, it means even b'hana'a. So that it's a really bifurcated din here, which is as long as we believe that there's enough fear or he feels that somebody's watching him, then the wine remains completely mutar. Even though that's not the reality, the question is what is his perception of what's happening? Over here, even though there wasn't a Jew inside, nevertheless, he doesn't have that knowledge. Since he doesn't have that knowledge, he fears that the Jew is upstairs watching him, and therefore he won't touch it. Similarly, in the case before, where he had the hole in the door, even if there's nobody watching him, his knowledge that there is a hole in the door makes it that someone could see him, and therefore he won't do anything opposite that area. That's what makes those barrels mutar b'shtiyah. The ones on the periphery are asur b'hana'a because he could hide himself and do whatever he wants. He's not fearful of anybody catching him. And obviously, in these cases, we qualify about what we spoke about yesterday, which is whether the barrels are tuchot or stumot. Tuchot not meaning that they're totally open, but they're closed without a seal versus something that's sealed. Because if they are sealed, then there might be a totally different din here. Then you have to consider the fact that you would have to unseal it, reseal it, which is something that would take a duration of time. The circumstance just doesn't allow for that. In those cases, the wine barrels that are stumot would remain mutarim. And again, it's qualified by what we said yesterday. So again, here, even though the door is locked, and that would then preclude the Jew from coming in, the goy's uncertainty as to where the Jew is enough of a factor to make him fearful of touching it, because he thinks the Jew might be in the house, even though that's not the reality. His perception is sufficient to make it that it is mutar.
So
there was this hostess that was holding on to wine belonging to Jews. They found a non-Jew sitting amongst the barrels inside of this hostess's house. If when you find this individual, then he's considered like a ganav, meaning that he is uneasy about being there, and he would be scared if he got caught, then shari, everything is mutar. V'ilo, if he doesn't feel that way, asur. So here again, the issue is whether the goy feels free to do as he pleases. If he's down there, and then somebody comes down and says, what are you doing down here? Then they would be fine, because the goy himself is afraid someone's going to find him down there doing something. And since he is fearful of that, he won't do anything that's untoward. On the other hand, if he feels comfortable down there, or somebody finds him down there and says, you know, come on, you can't be down here, go somewhere else, then he's not going to feel so fearful, then we worry about the wine. How beta dayoti b'chamra, it was a house in which there was stored wine. Ishtakach ovei kochavim tavkaim beidani. Again, they found a non-Jew who was amongst the barrels. Amarova iit leilishtemute chamra sir. If he has a way to come up with an excuse as to why he's there, or he can give some sort of alibi as to what he's doing there, then the chamra, the wine, is problematic, because he can talk his way out of being caught as a ganav or feeling uneasy about being there. Vilo chamra shari. That's not the case, then the wine is fine, because he'd be scared to be caught. If he's scared to be caught, he's going to be scared to do anything with the barrels. As Rashi notes over here, the afa gav de maga yain lately de shtimute, even though when it comes to the contact with the wine, he has no excuse. I mean, he might have an excuse why he's in there. He can't have an excuse as why he's inside the barrel. Nevertheless, asur. Dilav de nisuche al lamale de ayo. So if he didn't go in there to touch the wine, to be menasech the wine, what's he doing in there? And what else is a goy doing inside of your cellar with the wine? So maybe he's drinking, but even that itself is problematic, because that's magol b'kochavim. But their practice also was, even if he was drinking, he would do some nisuch before he started to drink. What Rashi points out is that even if his excuse only excuses his presence there, doesn't excuse his drinking, nevertheless, once he has an excuse that he can be there, he figures he can talk his way out of it, and he doesn't feel so fearful. Once that is, he will then feel comfortable enough to do something further, which is that he's not uncomfortable about being there, so he'll be uncomfortable maybe by drinking, but that's not enough of a dissuasion to him. It's only if he's going to be caught and then say, what are you doing here? You're a thief. Then he would be dissuaded from doing that or being engaged there. So as long as he feels comfortable there, then we worry about it. And Rashi is doing that to differentiate it, or saying that to differentiate it for the case of the Mishnah. He says, below domi l'miniach ovei kochavim b'chanuto. It's not similar to our case in the Mishnah where he leaves ovei kochavim in his store. Tahatam kevin dibishut ayo, biadina lamai ayo. There he has reason to be in there, because you gave him permission to be there. You asked him to be there. So therefore, his entry there in of itself is not problematic. As opposed to over here where he's not allowed to be there, his entry in itself is problematic, and then we have to assign a motive to his entry. And that motive, Rashi says, is that he wants to touch the wine, or he wants to do nisach hayayin. For the chanut, where we have reason for him to be in there, then we have to worry about whether he did or didn't touch it. That has to do with the fear factor. So Rashi says, this assumption of guilt comes from the fact that he's not supposed to be there, and we have to explain what he is doing there. If we could explain it a different way, maybe we'd be willing to be more makil if he's afraid to touch the wine. But if we can't explain his presence, then we're going to assume his presence is there for the purposes of touching the wine, and we're going to assume that he did touch the wine in that case. If you look in the Otalif of the Bach over here, you'll notice that he suggests to look back in the end of Paragraph Yishmael on Daf Samach Aleph of Medvet, and over there it seems, according to the Pirush of Rashi, that these are all one case. This case of Hau Ishpiza, as well as the case of Hau Beita, are really one case. And that the terminologies here of Nipas Alav Kiganav and Itle Lishtemute are really two sides of the same coin. He'll only be Nipas Alav Kiganav if he cannot be Ishtemute. If he can be Ishtemute, then he won't be Nipas Alav Kiganav. And therefore, many view these as being a single case rather than separate issues. Although there are Rishonim who try to differentiate and say that the Yishpiza, which is a place that there is more public access to because there are multiple people staying there, or maybe multiple people storing their wine there, then the chashash of Nipas Alav Yuganav would not be in the fact that the person's found there, but rather in the fact that they're actually touching the barrels, versus in the case of Hau Beita, where even being there is problematic, and in that way, the terminologies would actually be slightly different, because they're being choshesh for different issues in these cases. Meteve, Ninal Apundak, Oshamar Lo Shmor, if the pundak was locked up, so now, when they locked it up, the Ovi Kochavim was inside the pundak, and now he has yichud with the wine that's inside. Or, he says to the individual, Shamor, watch my wine for me, Asur. So in the first case, as Rashi notes, the goy is inside with the wine, and in the other case, Shamor Amod Bachutz, stand outside and take care of the wine outside. And then over here, Rashi says that we are Chai Shinan, that when he says to him, watch it, then he relies on the fact that he must be leaving for a while when he tells him to watch the wine that's out here. And that gives him the confidence to do what he wants to do with the wine. And that's why there's a problem with the wine. In that case, all of these are asur because we assume that the goy took advantage of the situation. My love, afgav delet ledich timute. Sounds like here, that's whether he has an excuse to be there or not, that it'd be problematic. It says, lo, bidit ledich mute. It's a case where he has reason or he can explain his presence in those areas, then the wine is problematic. If he can't explain his presence there, the wine is mutar because of the fear factor. How Israel bovei kochavim davyative. There was a Jew and a non-Jew sitting down because shatu chamra, they were drinking wine together. It's interesting in of itself because the whole takana or the whole purpose of this gzeira of stam yenam and then partly of yayin nesach as well was mishum benotehem. It was to impede this socialization or this drinking together. Nevertheless, they were drinking together. Shama Yisrael kal tzluyei beknishta. He heard them starting to daven in the shul. He goes, oh, I forgot, I gotta go run. He runs, goes to run, kam basel. He runs, goes to daven with the minion over there. Amar Rava chamra shari. Rava says the wine is fine. Meimar amar, the goy thinks, hashta midgar le bechamre. He's gonna remember that he left his wine here. Bahadurati. He's going to say he just lost his mind. He forgot that he had his wine here. He ran into shul because he heard that. And then he's going to remember in a second that the wine was there. He's going to run back out to come get it. So even though we know that davening takes a little bit of time, but the goy is going to think, even though davening takes time, the Jew is going to remember at his stuff and run back out and take his stuff. So he is fearful of touching it because he thinks, hashtahati. He might come at any moment and see me doing this, and that would be problematic. Then I'd be nitpas kiganav. Baya Tosfot suggests this is similar to the case that we had yesterday, and that is that Dabka Yayin Sha'ala Dublaki Shari. That only the wine that is still sealed up or somewhere else where he doesn't feel empowered to drink from it, that wine will be okay. But the wine that they were sharing or was here on the table, that wine would be problematic because the goy feels empowered to touch that or to use that. As the Baya Tosfot point out, the Rova Kamash Malan, Rova's teaching us then, the when he hears the call for prayer, or he hears that runs out to the Beit Knesset, it's the equivalent as if he didn't disclose to him that he's leaving, or how long he's leaving for, or what he's leaving for. Or the Baalei Tosfot would say that even the wine that's on the table might be mutar. That's when they're each drinking from their own flasks, or they're drinking from their own wine, where the goy is not even permitted to touch the Jew's wine. In that case, even the wine on the table would be permitted once he comes back, because the goy doesn't feel empowered to touch it. And again, the way the Baalei Tosfot are describing over here, it's as if, or as equivalent to the case where he didn't disclose that he is leaving, and that in and of itself makes that the goy is always fearful that he will return. And again, we'll be subject to all the rules and restrictions that the Rishonim spoke about yesterday, whether it's a surprise, whether he knows where he went, and all the Rishonim's opinions there will have application over here then. How Yisrael Bovei Kuchavim W'Yativei Ba'arba. So there was this Jew and Ovi Kuchavim, they were sitting on a boat. Shama Yisrael Kal Shipurei D'Bei Shimshei. The Jew heard the shofarot that are blown on Erev Shabbat. On Erev Shabbat, they used to blow the shofarot entering into Shabbat. There were six blows of the shofar. The first three a little earlier, the second three at the time of Shkia. So here's the shofarot being blown. It says, Nafa Basel. He left. He went off the boat. He says, oh, Shabbat's coming. I gotta go. Amarova Chamra Shori. Once again, the wine is fine. Meima Amar Hashta Midgardli Lachamre. Vadarati. The goy again is going to say, the guy, he's going to remember that he left his wine here when he ran out for Shabbat, and he's going to come back and get it. V'i mishum shabto. What about the fact that it's Shabbat? And he knows on Shabbat, partly, won't go on the boat. And if he goes on the boat, he's not going to carry the stuff from the boat because he can't carry on Shabbat. So there's a certain assumption of that the goy has familiarity with the practices of the Jews, and therefore he knows if it's Shabbat, the Jew has no way to carry this wine out of here. He's not going to come back for the wine. Very interesting response here. Rava Amar, but the Rif and the Rosh take that out of the gear, so we'll just write Hamar Li Isar Giura. Isar Giura, who was a convert, one of the individuals who married one of Shmuel's daughters, Ki Avinan Be'armiyutan, when we were still non-Jews, when we were pre-conversion, Amrinan Yudai Lo Mintere Shabto. We believed, as Goyim, that the Jews didn't keep Shabbat. Di Mintere Shabto, because if they really did keep Shabbat, we would find many wallets or money pouches that were left in the shuk. I mean, that people would forget them, drop them. Shabbat would come in and they have no way to move them anymore because you can't carry on Shabbat. So it's not in a place where they have an eruv or a place where the city is closed in, but a place where you have a public thoroughfare and now the money bags or pouches that are found in the shuk would be problematic to carry. So they would assume they can go through the shuk. No Jew would come back then to carry on Shabbat. And they would find things. Yet they never found anything. Ve'inhu lo yadu. They don't know the sphere like Rabbi Yitzchak. That we paskin like Rabbi Yitzchak. Damar Rabbi Yitzchak. Amotzi kis b'Shabbat. Someone who finds a money pouch, a wallet on Shabbat. Molicho pachot pachot midalat amot. You can carry it less than 4 amot. Problem to move in Reshut HaRabim is 4 amot. And you need an akira and anachanacha. You have to uproot it and then put it down. So if you stop in series that are less than 4 amot, then you can avoid at least violating the deoraita of carrying Bishut HaRabim. And that way, in certain instances, we allow or give dispensation for the person to do that in order that they either can protect their possessions. For instance, we have that by tefillin. We're afraid that the tefillin are going to get misappropriated. Someone's going to find them and throw them out. So we allow you to do it, pachot pachot midalat amot, to rescue or to save the tefillin and bring them in. Similarly over here, a person will be bohul amimono. If we don't allow him to deal with it, what he's ended up doing is carrying it just straight out because he's so worried about losing his money. So what we did was we created a way that he can do it with a dispensation, which is to do it pachot pachot midalat amot. So we have a way to get around it, but they don't understand that. They don't understand the intricacies of the law or the legal loopholes that we can use in Shabbat. And therefore, they see all the wallets gone. They think that they just don't keep Shabbat. Similarly over here, that goy who's on the boat, Jews don't carry on Shabbat. But in the meantime, we see that all their wallets disappear. So they do carry on Shabbat. So they're not going to really believe that Jews don't carry on Shabbat. Given that perspective, he will expect the Jew to come back. That expectation in of itself is sufficient to make him fearful and therefore, the wine is mutar. And this is different from the cases that we saw yesterday, either because the Jew suddenly left, and when his sudden leaving, the goy feels that he'll suddenly appear. Because just the same way that he left in a rush, he'll come back in a rush. But implied in that would be that if he left in a calm and collected fashion, this would be no different than the cases yesterday with the determination of how long he's gone for, or how much information the goy has when he does leave. The Rashba, on the other hand, claims that the common denominator over here is the fact that he could do these actions in the place where he is. He could daven here, he just chose to go daven there. He could be shoveit Shabbat here, he just chose to go somewhere else. And that's what the goy is worried about, is that he could change his mind or he could come back at any moment to daven over here. So it has nothing to do with being in a rush. It has to do with the nature of the activity. As opposed to yesterday where he went to the Beit HaMerchatz, he went to something that he can't do here, that he went somewhere else, and he can only do over there, then the goy is not worried if he has that information about the Jew coming back, because he knows it's going to take him time to do whatever he had planned to do in that alternate location. By the way, if you haven't noticed, the Rav is the posek in all the cases here, as Rashi says at the beginning of the Amud, Hilchato Kerova. Generally, the halacha is like Rava, because he's a Batra, but over here, he's uncontested in all these cases. So if Rava is giving the psak, the halacha is like Rava in all of these cases. How are ya? David Noim b'me'atzarta. There was this lion that was roaring by the wine presses. Shamovi kuchavim. Tasha benidani. He was, heard the lion roaring, got so scared, he ran to hide behind the barrels or amongst the barrels so the lion wouldn't get him. Amarava chamra shori. Again, Rava says that the wine is mutar. Says, just like I'm here hiding from the lion, there's maybe someone else behind me also hiding in this cellar amongst the barrels. And he's going to see what I'm doing, and he's going to catch me red-handed. So the fear of someone else being there because of the same reason makes it, again, even if there's nobody there, makes it that his perspective or his feeling or his fear is that someone is there, and that's enough to dissuade him from doing anything with the wine. Hanu ganve, the salka de Pumpedita. So there was thieves that came marauding through Pumpedita, batu chavita tuva. And they opened up a large number of barrels. Question here, the Balei Tosfot discuss about whether the word tuva really needs to be in this sugya. And over here, the Balei Tosfot would say it's labdavka tuva, that they opened up a lot of barrels. We'll see on the upcoming cases that tuva will make a difference because that would be one of the reasons it's mutar. But in our case, it's not related necessarily to the ruba base. Marova chamra shari. Rava says the wine is totally fine. My taima. Why is it fine? You have all these thieves going through opening up the wine. Why don't we assume that there's a problem of yain nesach over here? The answer is ruba ganve Yisrael ninhu. The majority of the thieves are Jewish. So if they're Jewish thieves, we don't have to worry about the yain nesach. In Pumpedita, they knew that the thieves that were running around were Jews. Avodah in Nardai, there was an incident in Nardai. So the previous was in Pumpedita, now it's happening in Nardai. Amar Shmuel, Chamra Shori. Then Shmuel says wine is mutar. Come on. What is the reasoning behind Shmuel, Ki Rabbi Eliezer? Maybe it's like Rabbi Eliezer, Damar, Safek Biah Tahor. That when you have a Safek as to whether someone entered or didn't enter, then it's considered to be Tahor. It's not. We have a Mishnah with regards to Tuma and Tahara. Hanichnas lebik'a bimot ha'gshamim. Someone who enters into an area where there are large tracts of fields, bimot ha'gshamim means in the winter time, the rainy season when they're planted. So there is a difference, the Mishnah note, between the summertime, where there's nothing in the fields, and large numbers of people traverse the area, both because it's not muddy, as well as the fact that there's nothing planted there, so it's a thoroughfare or it's a shortcut for people and people don't worry about it. Then in the wintertime, where it's very muddy, and on top of that, the fields are planted and the Balei Abatim don't want people walking on their fields or cutting through there because it's going to ruin the crops. So in that case, it turns into a Reshuta Yachid in a sense. Reshuta Rabim here and Reshuta Yachid are not in the senses of Shabbat. They're in the senses of the quantity, number of people that are traversing the area. If there are large numbers of people traversing the area, legabei tumah, that's considered to be a reshut rabim. If there are few people that go through there, or a number of people that go through there, but not large quantities, then it becomes a reshut yachid for tumah. So the point of the Mishnah is that a nichnas lebikah bimot hagishamim. He went there in the winter time, which makes it into a reshut yachid for tumah. Bitumah b'sadeh plonit. And one of the fields in that tract down there has tumah in it. Vamar. And the person who traversed the area says, "Alachti b'kom alas, v'enu yodeim nichnasti l'oto sadeim lo nichnasti." I know I went through, I crossed through that bikah. I just don't know if I entered into that field. Rabbi Lez Omer, safek bi'ah tahor. If he's uncertain as to whether he entered into the field or did not enter into the field, then he is tahor. Safek maga tamei. Then, if he knows he entered in the field, it's just not sure he touched the tumah, then he will be tamei. You have two different questions that arise here. One question arises is whether did you ever enter the area, did you ever come or access the area that had tumah in it? He says that even though that's a reshut yachid, Rabbi Eliezer believes, safek biyah. The question of whether you ever entered into the area of tumah is enough of a safek to make you tahor. Then if the safek is not whether you entered there, but whether you became tamei or not, that becomes the classic case of safek tumah bishut yachid. And safek tumah bishut yachid is tamei, as opposed to safek tumah bishut rabim, which is tahor. And we learn that from the case of sota. By sota, where the Torah says that she is in seclusion, and that's why she's considered to be tmeah. From that we learn that if it's a safek tumah bishut yachid tmeah, safek tumah bishut rabim, then it is tehora. So here, even though it's a safek tumah bishut yachid, Rabbi Elazar bifurcates the din between biyah and maga. Obviously, the chachamim disagree with him and say even if it is safek biyah, that it would be tameh. So what the Gemara is saying here is Shmuel's psak relying on Rabbi Eliezer, which is you have a safek biyah and not a safek maga. So Rashi explains over here, de lo yadin en obe kachavim I al, I lo al, tahor. That we don't know if the obe kachavim went in or didn't go in, it's tahor. Mushum achi shori. The shani lam is safek biyah, mi biyah vadai v'safek maga. Because we differentiate between a question about whether he entered or not, or is it a question if he definitely entered, just a question if it's tamei or not. So here, the incident in Nardah is that these non-Jews were running through the city. The question is, did they in effect the barrels that are in the city? So, in Pumpadita, they said, Ruba ganve Yisrael ninhu. The majority of them were Jews, and therefore it didn't matter that they went into the houses, because since the majority were Jews, even if they did touch the wine, it wouldn't have been an issue. Over here, Shmuel's taking in Nardah, and over there he doesn't make the comment that Ruba the Yisrael ninhu, that the majority are Jews, making it sound like they are Obdei Kochavim, or a good possibility they're Obdei Kochavim. So then why is he Mitaher? So the answer is that we don't know if they entered the houses. We know that they went on a rampage through the city. We just have no idea which houses they entered, which places they went to they didn't go to. So what we're suggesting now is that that is the Safek. It's a Safek Bi'ah. It's a question of did they enter or did they not enter. And in that case, Rabbi Lesha says you are Tahor by Tumah. Similarly over here, you'll say that it is Mutar by the Yayin. If that is true, then in Shmuel's Heter relies upon Rabbi Eliezer, and it's all based on a Safek Bi'ah, this question as to whether he entered, but that also means that the Rabbonon would disagree. The Gemara says, lo, shiny hotam. Over there it's different, meaning, as Rashi says over here, even the Chachamim would agree in the case of Shmuel and Nardai, came into Itcha de Patche de Shumbemona, Havilei, Sveik, Sveika. And that's what Rashi explains over here. Safek Israel, Safek Ovei Kochavim. The first Safek is, were they Jewish or were they not Jewish? Vim Tim Salam Ovei Kochavim, even if you want to say that they're Ovei Kochavim, Safek Naga, Safek Lo Naga. It's a question of whether they touched or they didn't touch it. So now, the Safek Naga is not enough usually, but over here the Safek Naga is premised on a possibility that they would touch it for non-religious reasons. They would touch it because they're searching for the valuables. They're opening up the barrels, not because they think wine's in there. They open up the barrels because they think there are jewelry or matmoniot, some sort of treasure that they're going to find inside of it. When they see it's wine, they just abandon it. They don't touch it. That's what Rashi says. Even in this case, the Rabbanan would agree. Chachamim disagree with him when the field is full of tumah. Because in that case, if he entered the field, there's no question that he became tameh. So there, Rabbi Lashon says, Safek Biyah is Tahor. The Chachamim say, Safek Biyah is Tameh. In our case, it's not like that. It's not 100% that if they went in, it's Yayin Nesach. Even if they went in, there's still a question as to whether, when they touched it, they were touching it for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, or were they touching it for the purposes of Gneva. And since you now have a Sfek Sveika, that's enough of a reason to make it Tahor or Mutar, and the Chachamim would agree in that case. That's the way that Rashi explains it, that Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim's position is a machloket b'safek, but by sfek sfeika, everybody would agree. The Baalei HaTosafot on the Amud Bet hint at the fact that the Rabbeinu Tam had a different explanation of this Gemara over here, and that is found both in the Tosafot and Baba Batra, as well as some of the other Baalei HaTosafot that are written on Avodah Zarah, that the Rabbeinu Tam believed that the etzem machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim was about a case of sfek sfeika. The Gemara is suggesting over here, the reason that Shmuel was matur in Nardah was because of the fact that it was a sfek sfeika, and he's passing like Rabbi Eliezer. And that is, Rabbi Eliezer believes when you have a sfek biyah, sfek maga, This is a case where we don't know if he entered the field, and even if he entered the field, we're not sure that he actually came to the Tumah, then Rabbi Elazar says he's Tahor. The Chachamim say, in that case, that's just called Safek Maga, and it's still considered to be one Safek. He has Safek about whether he entered the field. And even if he entered the field, but he touched the Tumah, it's all one Safek. Whether he touched the Tumah or didn't touch the Tumah, and that is Tameh. So their argument is about, really, whether this is considered to be a Safek Sveka, or even if it is a Safek Sveka, Rabbi Elazar says it's Tahor, Chachamim say Tameh. And then the Gemara's question is not a question suggesting that this is only like Rabbi Eliezer, but rather, come on, for Rabbi Eliezer, you want to suggest that this is like Rabbi Eliezer, but doesn't Rabbi Eliezer require a Sfek Sfeka? And where is your Sfek Sfeka over here in this case? And the Gemara's answer is that you do have a Sfek Sfeka, because you have Safek Yisrael, Safek Ovei Kochavim, and even if it is an Ovei Kochavim, Safek Naga, Safek Lo Naga, because of the possibility that he was looking for money, treasures and valuables that were stored in these barrels. They found this young girl who was amongst the barrels, and she had some froth in her hands. If she's got froth on her hands, that almost is certain that she touched the wine in order to get the froth off the top of the wine. Amarova chamra shori. The wine is mutar. Imar migabad chavita shakalte. We'll assume that she got it from the outside of the barrel. So this froth used to seep out of the barrels or come out onto the outside of the barrels. Let's assume that she got it from the outside of the barrels. Ba'afa got the leka too. Even if you go in there and you look and there's not a single barrel with froth on the outside, we can't find anything like that. Amar, it's mu'ye, it's ramilo. Let's just assume that's what happened. The assumption is that she happened to find it. Maybe there's no more now, but she was successful at finding it, and we'll give her the benefit of the doubt. Now, Rashi over here makes a comment. Vedavka revita. It's only true by a young girl. Deniodat mativ nisuch. Because she doesn't really know what's going on with nisuch hayayin. Below masra nafsha leminga. Therefore, she's not going to be compelled religiously to go and touch the wine and to do this nisuch hayayin. Aval gidola, if she was a woman who's already more mature, maybe even a girl's more mature, and understands about yayinesech, mikigazina de nikita ofia, lo talina lekula. If we see she has the froth on her hands, then we would not be talina lekula. Rashi is really saying is, there are two aspects here. The fact that she has froth, and we can assume that maybe she got the froth from the outside of the barrel, that's already one side head there. The second side heter is, even if she got the froth from inside the barrel, she doesn't get involved in Yayin Nesech. She's a young girl. This isn't her field of expertise. This isn't something that she gets involved with. She doesn't understand it. So even if she went into the barrel, it wouldn't have been a problem. Even though generally, Naga, Ovei Kochavim, doesn't matter. But over here, since they don't know the Tivin Nisach Yayin, plus she could have gotten it from the back, those together make the heter. Clear from that, that Rashi thinks that Egdola, we would not say that. The Baalei Tosafot disagree with Rashi. The Baalei Tosafot's main criticism of Rashi is, Mi'o lo matzinu chiluk zeh b'shum makom, that there's no place in Shas where we find this type of distinction between a Revita and someone who's older. And that's why he says, Lav Davko. Revita just happens to be what the case was. It was a young girl. But it'd be true of anyone. If they come out with just froth on their hands, we will assume that they got it from the outside of the barrels, even though we can't find any barrels that look like that. Nevertheless, we'll assume that's where it came from. And not assume that they put their hand into the barrel to take out the froth. And even though this is a Gdola, who does know Betiv Yayin Esech, that's not the reason for that. The reason for that is that we can come up with a way that they access the froth without touching the wine. And that is the Heter that derives. The Baalei Tosafot says something interesting in the end, which is, there's obviously a huge nafkamina between Rashi and the Baalei Tosafot as to whether this has application to people who do understand Yayin Esech. Rashi would say that it does not apply here to Heter, and the Baalei Tosafot would say yes. Then the Baalei Tosafot would say, but in our time, ain't nafkamina. There's no nafkamina today, and he brings up the line that he says in many other places, Mio, the perish of kunches, lo nafkamina midei, da'akshav gamak dolim ina bikim v'tiv nisuch. Because today, even those that are older don't really do na'yat yayin nesech. I mean, it's just not the practice of the goyim around us. They don't even know what yayin nesech is. They don't even do it anymore. Even if they do it, they're really only doing minhag b'tam b'yadam. They're not really masur to the Ovei Kochavim. And for that reason, he says that even according to Rashi, a gedola today wouldn't be a problem. Because once you can be mitztarif heterim, then we will assume that the goyim in our time are not so involved in nisuch hayayin. From its tarif, those heterim, I will say that it's mutar, and he says, therefore, even Rashi would agree in this case. He also asks, what about the fact that there is what's called nitzel, which is that there's a connection between the froth and the wine. There's a physical connection between the two. And if they touch the froth, that should be enough to give you a problem with the wine. So our girsa in the Gemara is, she took it from the back of the barrel. If you look in the Bayit Tosfot, he had a girsa, imar migava dechavita kalatata. She captured it from there, not that she took it from there. Below noga bayayin. She didn't touch the wine at all. Ela min avir kalatata. She caught it out of the air. Aval isha kalta mi al gabe hayayin. If she scooped it off the top of the wine without touching the wine, yaser mitam nitzok. Then it would be asur because of the physical contact between the froth and the wine itself. Mio yesh bisfarim yishanim. There are in the older sfarim, shakalta, which is the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Vafilo achi shari. Mishom deina bikiya betiv nisuch. Lo masu nafsha leminga. The kepeir shakuntris, like Rashi said. Ava bagdola came into nikita ofya ikalamechash. But then if she is someone who then is of age, then you would have to worry about it. So over here, the Bali talks about really qualify what they said before, which is we're not differentiating between a youngster and an older girl. Rashi said there is a difference, and Bali Tosfot just said, if you have the girsa of Shakalte, then you have to make that distinction as well, which is that if she scooped the froth off the top, then otherwise that would be considered to be nigia, touching, because of the contact, or the physical contact between the froth and the wine itself. And then he says, like Rashi says, then you'd have to make a distinction between somebody who is involved in Yayin Nesach and someone who's not involved in Yayin Nesach. The Bali Tosfot qualified their statement before that it only works if she catches the froth out of the air or takes it off the back of the barrel where there's no connection to the wine itself. But if there is some sort of physical connection between the froth and the wine, then you might have a serious problem because of nitzok. And that problem would then make it that he would have to make the distinction that Rashi made, that there's a difference between a young girl who doesn't understand Yayin Nesach and an older girl who does understand Yayin Nesach, because then the touch would be meaningful in that case because of touching the froth, which then is attached to the wine. All right, so now, how pul Musa, the Salik Nenardo. So there was this troop or officers that came into Narda. Usually when the pul Musa came in, they basically emptied the town out. That was how they got their supplies. That's how they got their money. That's how they got fed. They basically went through the town and took what they wanted. So this pul Musa came to Narda. Patcho chavita tuva. They opened up large numbers of barrels. Kiata Rabdimi, Amar Uvda Havakame Rabbi Elazar. We had a similar incident with Rabbi Elazar, Vishara. And he was matir the wine and said it wasn't a problem. Veloyadana, I don't know why he was matir. Rabdimi is coming from Eretz Yisrael and bringing in a case or an incident from Rabbi Elazar. He knows what the psak is, but he doesn't know the reason behind the psak. And now they're trying to apply the psak over here. Imishom Visavala Ki Rabbi Eliezer. Is it because he holds like Rabbi Eliezer, Damar Safek Bia Tahor? The question of whether he entered or didn't enter makes it Tahor. Imishum de Kasavar, Ruba de Azle, Behate Pumusa Israel Ninu. Or is it because he believed the majority of people in this troop that was coming through were actually Jews? If they were, majority was Jews, then there's not an issue anymore, because that's similar to the case that we had with Pumpadita, or the Rove Ganve Israel Ninu. Majority of them are Jewish thieves, and therefore if they're in there for thievery, we don't worry about Yayin Nesach, especially when they are Jewish thieves. So if it's Ruba d'Israel, that's one explanation, and that would give you the heter just because we're not worried about them touching it at all. On the other hand, if you believe like Rabbi Eliezer, that's a safek bia. So then, Mar says, what do you mean? Ihachi ay safek bia, ha safek magahu. If you believe that the majority are not Jews, then the majority are goyim. The majority are goyim, that's no longer a safek bia. It's a safek maga. We don't know if they touched the wine or didn't touch the wine. So my answer is, came into miftechei tuva, since there are a large number of barrels opened, ema daita de mamona patku. It's because of the mamon that they opened it up, uke safek bia domi. And it makes it similar to a safek bia, because the maga here is somewhat mitigated, because of the fact that the magah could have been for monetary matters, and the magah could be of nisuch yayin matters. And the way Rashi explains it over here, harbei yoter mikdei tzarach shtiatan. They opened more barrels than they could have ever drank from. Quantity of barrels that were opened just exceeds the number of barrels that they needed to drink. From there, it makes it clear that they were going after money and not after the wine. They were opening it up because they thought they'd find money inside of them, and they'd walk when there's wine. And they are bogged down with their theft. Which is the next Mishnah coming up. It's like a troop that enters into the city during wartime. That Mishnah says that everything is mutar because they are involved in the battle. They're involved in the war. And then even though there's a fake naga, a fake no naga, we go to kula because of the circumstances in which they find themselves. And similarly over here, since Rashi says they opened up too many barrels, the quantity just far exceeds their capacity to drink it. That means that they were clearly looking for money and not looking for wine. So therefore Rashi says, even though in the end it's a safek maga, because the assumption is that this pumusa are non-Jews. Unlike the case of Ganve, where you could claim they're Jews or non-Jews, and that was part of the safek in Pumadita and Ordai, over here the pumusa for sure are non-Jews. So now you have a safek maga. Why are we calling it a safek bia? Rashi says, because came into mukha milta lakula safek bia dami. Because since there is a high likelihood, or there's a likely reason why they touched it that was not for Yayin Nesech, that's similar to the case of Safek Bia, which is Rashi the Shita Tov before, who says that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion of Safek Bia is not just in a case of a Safek Sveika, it's even in the case of a single Safek, where if there's a Safek about you entering this field, so what Rashi is saying is when you have a Safek as to whether their touch was intentional at all, or had anything to do with the topic, that's enough of a reason to make it similar to the Safek of Rabbi Eliezer. Since there's good evidence that they didn't touch it on purpose, because given the number of barrels that they touched, and for that reason, Rashi believes it's similar to the case before. But the Ravenu Tam, who before said Rabbi Eliezer's principle is premised on it being a Sfeik Sveika, so that explanation of Rashi is not going to work over here. He needs to get to a Sfeik Sveika in order for it to be Mutar Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, the Baalei Tosafot say, according to the Ravenu Tam, that nehi the safek im a pumusa im dovde chachamim o Yisrael. The truth is that it may be a safek whether the pumusa was Jewish or not Jewish, like by the case of the ganavim. Mimkol makom im him obde chachamim vade nage. But if they are not Jewish, they definitely touched it. Vileka rak chad sveka. And therefore, there's only one safek. Were they Jewish or were they not Jewish? If they were Jewish, they touched it, it's not a problem. If they were not Jewish, they touched it, and it was a problem. So there's no double safek over here. And that's because by Ganavim, their main intent is come to take and steal. On the other hand, by the Pumusa, their main reason they're coming is to eat and drink. And therefore, the likelihood of their touching is that they came and they drank the wine. And that's the answer of the Gemara then, which is that the Gemara says, no, over here where they opened up so many barrels beyond the amount that they could have consumed, that's an indication that they were looking for something more than simply drink. And therefore, it returns to being a Sfeik Sveika now. Safek whether it was a Jew, safek whether it was a goy, and even if you want to say that they are obdei kochavim, maybe they opened it up because they were searching for some valuables, or maybe they opened it up to do yayin nesech, and now you're back to a sfeik sveika, and Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer, sfeik sveika, according to Rabbeinu Tam, would be mutar. Hay misubita, misubita, as Rashi says, comes from the word zolel visovei. Zolel visovei means someone who is gluttonous. Someone who is steeped in drink. So a suvita is someone who is a merchant of wine. He provides the wine. He provides the intoxicating beverage. The masrala iklida, and now it seems that the word maftecha is just a synonymous with iklida. Iklida is the Aramaic for a key. She gave over a key, lo vedet kochavim. She gave her the key not to enter into the place, but to watch the key. She wanted someone to guard the key for her. So she hands the vedet kochavim the key. This incident came up in the Beit Midrash. She only gave her the right and responsibility to take care of the key. But she didn't give her the right to use the key and enter into that area. So that would mean that the wine that's under lock and key is fine because she was just given the responsibility for watching the key, not the right to access the area. And Tosafot, based on this scenario in the Gemara, brings a case, Mikan, Shim Tafasa Moshel Tiyudi, the ruler takes away, holds away this Jew, and then he puts up non-Jews to watch his house in the meantime, or to secure his property in the meantime, and he has to give them all the keys, including the keys to the cellar or to where the wine is. If they don't eat and drink, or they don't feel permitted to eat and drink that which is in the house of the Jew, then the yayin remains mutar, because they're simply there to guard, not to take. If they feel free to eat and drink in there, then the wine is asur, because then there's no fear. They have no fear of being caught, because they feel permitted to go and eat and drink from the items. But if the Jew comes back and finds them full and exactly like the way they were before, then you don't have to worry about it, because you're not going to worry about them swapping out the barrels. And the Baal Tosfot add that if they are sealed and they remain sealed afterwards, we're not going to worry about them opening the seals and resealing them, because these people aren't afraid. They don't have any fear of being caught. So if they opened it up, they would have left it open. The fact that it's still sealed is a good indication that they didn't touch the wine. So in the case where he finds everything the same way it was before, you're not going to worry about them refilling the wine, swapping out the wine, or unsealing the wine and resealing it, because if they felt empowered to take whatever they want, they're not going to go through the trouble of hiding their actions. So if everything's intact, that's fine. So in a case where they're permitted to eat, everything is problematic. Elaine Kane, you find it the same way you left it. In the case where they don't feel empowered to eat, then everything is mutar, because they won't feel empowered to take that which belongs to the Jew in that case. Amrabai afanan namitanina. We also have this in a Mishnah. Moser maftechot amaretz. Someone who gives over his storage keys to the amaretz, te'arotav te'orot. The things that he keeps tahor, which an amaretz would make tamei, remain tahor. Fishlo masalo el shmirat mafteach bilvad. The same reason, they're only giving the amaretz the responsibility for watching the key. You're not giving the responsibility for watching the items in the area. You're simply giving him the key to watch. He doesn't, may not even know what the key is for, but we don't worry about his ability to access with the key now, because his job is to watch the key. His job is not to watch what the key can access. And therefore, we don't assume that he accessed the area or touched the items. And similarly, by Yayin Nesech. Hashta Tarav Tahorot. If from a Mishnah in Tarot, we know that his Tarot are Tahor, Yayin Nesech Mibayi, then do we have any question about Yayin Nesech? Lamemra, from this you would conclude, the Tarot Alimi Me Yayin Nesech, that Tarot have a higher standard or a higher threshold than Yayin Nesech. Where says it? Ditmar, Chatzer Shechalka B'misipas. You have a chatzer, you have a courtyard that is a courtyard shared by individuals. They divide it in the middle with a misipas. Misipas is actually in the first parak in Baba Batra. They speak about a misipas there. Rashi and the Baal Tosfot disagree exactly what the misipas is in these cases, but generally it is a very low demarcation between the properties. It is not a border or boundary that first of all stops you from seeing your friend's area. It's not even a border that it stops you from reaching over to your friend's area. It simply is a demarcation of a line showing where the border is between the chatzerot, so it's a very low type of wall or fence that is put up there. Amarav teharotav tmeot. And when you divide up the property, and one side is a chaver, and the other side is an ama aretz, and the chaver left his teharot out in his yard in the chatzer, then tmeot, according to Rav, because the Amaretz reaches across and touches them. Ubeove kochavim. If his neighbor is not a Amaretz, but a non-Jew, eno se yainesech. We don't worry about the wine that he's storing outside. If you put wine on your side of the chatzer, we don't worry about the ove kochavim reaching over. So here you see a distinction that by tarot, we do worry about the Amaretz sticking his hand over. By yayin nesech, we don't worry about it. So you see that tarot are more lechumra. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, haftarotav tarot. Rabbi Yochanan says it's consistent, that if he's not going to reach over for Yayin Nesach, he's also not going to reach over for the Tarot. Therefore, the Tarot are Tehorot, and the Yayin is not Yayin Nesach. Meitevei, is that really true? Ha'pnimit shel chaver v'chitzunah shel amaretz. You have a captive house. You have a chatzer inside of another chatzer, a house inside of another house. Oto chaver shoteach sham perot, u'miniach sham kelim. The chaver who owns the inner house can put his kelim there, can put out his perot there. Even though the arm or the reach of the Amaretz gets there, it's not problematic. The question is not about the Amaretz's right to walk in there. The person who lives in the internal space has a right or an easement to walk through the outer space. That means that his right to walk through the outer space is going to affect whatever is kept in the outer space. And that means that if there's stuff there, if the chaver or the Jew lives in the outer chatzer or the outer house, then we would worry about it because the individual on the inside has rights of passage and therefore he could touch the items. When it's in reverse, which is the chaver or the Jew is on the inside, then the internal person has rights on the outside, but the outside person does not have rights to go to the internal area, but he can reach it, he can touch it. And you see here, despite the fact that he can touch it, we still say that the harot are totally fine. That is goes against Rav's position in that previous statement, which is Rav said the harot were problematic. So kasha the Rav, amalacharav, shani otam, shenitpasalav keganav. That's because it's a difference about how he's going to be viewed in these situations. In the case of the outer and inner chatzer, outer inner house, then if he sticks his hand into the inner area, or his hand's reaching to the inner area, he doesn't belong in there. He's not someone who should have any access or rights of access. If he gets caught there, the person's going to say, what are you doing here? You're a thief. What's your hand doing in my place? On the other hand, in the case of the chatzer, where he divides it along the middle lines, he's sitting on the side, and he puts his hand across. The guy's not going to think that he's stealing from his chatzer. Yeah, he's stretching his hand. He's reaching across the chatzer. It's not as much of an affront or a violation of the person's personal property if he reaches across when the chatzerot are adjacent to each other. Whereas Tashma, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Gago Shel Chaver Lamalo, Gago Shel Amaretz. The chaver has a higher roof than the amaretz. They're next to each other, but the chaver is higher and the amaretz is below. Oto chaver shoteach sham perot u'miniach sham kelim, uvaj le'yado shel amaretz maget l'sham. You are allowed to put stuff up top in places where the amaretz can't reach. That shows you that the amaretz could reach it. We would worry about it. Kasha l'Rabbi Yochanan. This is a question for Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan said when you have the misipas through the middle of the chatzer, even if you can reach across, we don't worry about the horot. And yet over here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if the amaretz can reach it, we do worry about it. Over there, by the case of the gagot, by the roofs, he has an excuse. Meimar Amar, you can say, Amitsure kamimatsro. I was trying to measure how much space I had over here, how much I have to build in order to fill in the roof. He could come up with reasons as to why he's reaching onto the chaver's roof. You can say, I'm just trying to see how high it is, I'm trying to see this. Rashi does bring a second possibility that it means I was just stretching out. I was stretching my arm, I was stretching my body, I was doing my exercises, and that's why I had my hand over there. Those excuses make it that when you catch him, he won't feel like a ganav. He won't feel like he's doing something wrong. That's the case, then we do worry about his touch, or his touch. But in the case of the chatzer, where there's a divider, and he's got his arm over the divider, there Rabbi Yochanan says he's going to be nitpas la ganav, he's going to be considered like a thief if he reaches across. And therefore, the tarot are fine in that case. Tashma, gagosha chaver b'tzak gagosha l'amaretz. They are adjacent to each other. Oto chaver shoteach sham perot, umeach sham kelim. The chaver is allowed to put out his fruits, to put out his kelim. Afu pishti yadosh l'amaretz magat l'sham. Even though the amaretz can reach into that area. Kasha l'rav. Again, that's a problem for Rav. So over here, even with the accessibility of the amaretz, we don't assume he's touching the items. And in this case, it's very similar to our case. Instead of it being two chatzerot that are adjacent to each other, it's two gagot that are adjacent to each other. Seems like almost the exact same case. There is a slight difference, which is on the roofs, there may not be any line demarcating the differential or the sides of the property, whereas by the case of the chatzer, there is this dividing line. But nevertheless, it seems clear here that we don't worry about him putting his arm across. And it would be an achad kam v'kam. If on the roof there's no demarcation and we don't worry about it, and certainly where there is a demarcation, we wouldn't worry about it. Wait a minute, we just brought in the previous part of the Mishnah that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says exactly what I say. I'll subscribe to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position. Yeah, this part, okay, that's a problem. That problem will be someone who argues in Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But Rav says, I hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Anadamrei Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. I'll hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Even though there are other Mishnayot that indicate otherwise, those are the Baal Plukta of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Even though generally you would not set yourself up like a Dat Yachid, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is an exception because we have a principle that any time that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel speaks in the Mishnah, halacha kimoto. So there is a reason why Rav might take up the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, even though it's a Dat Yachid. Okay, next Mishnah. Boleshet shenichnasa meir. Now, Boleshet, today the modern term, Balash, is a spy. Here, the boleshet, as Rashi says, is chayil. They are a troop, or they are an army that is entering into the city. So why are they called boleshim if they are chayalim? Hashem shemechapsim v'chotrim. Because when they enter the city, they search the city, they turn the city over when they come in there. So they're called boleshim, not because they are spies. They're called boleshim because they search and they spy out what they're looking for. They come into the city and basically ransack the city. So that's why they're called a boleshet. So this boleshet, shenichnas aleir b'shat shalom, they enter in a time of peace. Chaviot tuchot asurot. Any barrel that's open is asur. Stumot mutarot. Any barrel that is sealed is mutar. The assumption being that any barrel that is open, they touched. If they touched it, then you have a problem of yayin nesech. And so the barrels that are open are problematic. Whether they open them, or they're already open, in either case it's a problem because they had easy access to the wine, and you have to assume that they did the wrong thing over here because they're not under pressure. It's shalom. And as Tosafot points out over here in the Mishnah, that the word tuva is not relevant. And that means that afilo, they opened up more than they needed, it'd still be problematic. And the Balei Tosafot point out that that is in distinction to the case of pulmusa. And the difference being is that the Mishum de Pumusa by the Gavot Masamelech, they're coming to collect the taxes of the king, Varnona, and other taxes, meaning that they have motives that are monetarily driven, not just coming to take food and whatever they want. For that reason, you can make an assumption or suggest that they're opening it up for monetary purposes. About Boleshet, Enibayim Kim, Davka Lechov Lishtot. The only reason the army's coming here, or they're coming through the town, is because they want to eat and drink, and they want to get supplies. So they're not here for monetary matters. If they open up the wine, or the wine is open, you can assume that they drank from it, or you can assume that they touched it. B'shat milchama, it's the middle of a battle, elu ve'elu mutarot. Whether it's an open barrel or closed barrel, it's mutar, the fish ain't p'nai l'nasech. They don't have enough time to deal with it. They're under pressure fighting. They may want to grab something to eat or drink, but they don't have any time for yayin nesech. Therefore, we're not going to worry about if they touched anything, or even if they did touch it, we're not going to worry about Yayin Nesech in this case. And even though, as you are pointing out, they still have a problem that they touched it, even if they were not Menasech, isn't there a problem with the Magav Agoy? So this goes back to what we discussed earlier, which is the addition of Yayin Nesech to the problem of Yayin. What does that do when there is no Chashash of Yayin Nesech? There are two aspects to Yayin. There's the aspect of Mishum Benotehem. And then there's an addition to that, the aspect of Yayin Nesech. So Mishum Benotehem makes it Asur Be'Shtia. The Yayin Nesech makes it also Asur Be'Hana'ah. So then when you take away the possibility of Yayin Nesech, does that then break down the whole Gzeirah or Takana? Or does that then just leave you with the problem of Mishum Benotehem? In this case, it favors the opinion that says that it was really one Gzeirah, and that Yayin Nesech just dictated the Chumrah of the action, but it was all put together, not put together in two stages. And therefore, when there's no chashash of Yayin Nesech, the whole gzeira falls apart, because that was the ikar aspect of the gzeira. But even according to those that say that it was Mishum Benotehem, and then Mishum Yayin Nesech, over here, there's reason to believe that there's no problem for either. There's no problem of Yayin Nesech, and Mishum Benotehem doesn't apply here, because they're an army that's running through, and they're in the middle of a battle. Mishum Benotehem is not really a relevant factor here. You're not going to be sitting down and socializing with this wine. Therefore here, maybe they were mafia with regards to the maga once you eliminated the aspect of Yayin Nesech. Berimini, is that really true? Ir shekavshua karkom, a city that is conquered by a siege. They laid siege to the city after they breached the city and entered the city. All the women of that city are considered to be violated by the entering army. Now, it only has implications really for Kohanot, because by Kohanot, even if she is raped, she may not return to her husband who is a Kohen. For the Israelites, if she's raped, so it's no restriction against her returning to her husband. So that's why it speaks about the case of a Kohenet, because she will become a surah to her husband. So there you see that when they breached the city and they came in, it's Shat Milchama, and yet we still see that they had time to engage in Biyah. Amar Rav Mari, Nasech Ein Pnai, Livol Yesh Pnai. There's no time for doing Yayin Nesech, but there's plenty of time for Biyah. And Rashi explains over here, the Yetzer Nisuk Lo Tokiflu, that the Yetzer Ra to do Nisuk HaYayin is limited. If your life is being threatened, or you're still in the middle of a battle, You're not going to worry about doing your nisach hayayin. That's just not on the top priority list. On the other hand, when it comes to livol yishpnai, the takif lehu yitzrayu. That's the type of yetzer hara that is exceedingly strong, and people will make even, we'll call them, incorrect decisions in order to engage in this activity. So even though it's risking their lives in the middle of a battle, they'll still take the time out to be bo'el, or to rape in these situations. And that really goes to the story of the Eshet Yifat Toar, which is that over here there's actually an additional aspect of it, which is the sense that comes with one being a conqueror, or a killer, or someone who is in the army. The success of conquest makes the person feel even more empowered. And that empowerment also, quote-unquote, gives them the right then to go through people's houses, take what they want, including the women, and do whatever they want to the women. This obviously was a very common practice until probably the last century or so, when a city fell or a place was conquered by an army, that they took liberties to do to the residents of that city as they pleased, including the women. They became captives or became their concubines, and they slept with the women. So that's the problem over here. Now, Tosafot says, why don't you just say that this is after the siege is over, so maybe it's a time of shalom, and that's why it worked. The Baal Tosafot would say that statement, Irshik Kavshua Karkom, doesn't seem to make a distinction. Therefore, you have to assume it's whether they were Shat Shalom or not Shat Shalom. It seems to say that there is a problem. And so here you see there's a distinction between Bia and Nisuch Ayayin. Okay, we'll stop here with the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Aleph and Aleph.